I was going through some of my magazines recently. I'm sorry, Fred. God bless you. I always forget that you're going to do that. I should go back to India and then I get used to it again. I came across an article that I wrote in three parts for the Vision magazine back in 1968. And it was with regard to my first contact with Swami Ramdas, whom we call Papa here in the United States. And as all of you know, he was totally God-realized, tremendous soul. And my contact with him was certainly God's will and for a tremendous purpose. I had difficulty with that contact in the beginning because I was so tremendously glued to my own guru that I didn't even want to listen to anybody. I didn't want to go any place to hear anyone else. And I even felt that it was a little sacrilegious to have Swami Ramdas come and visit our place in the beginning. Such was my attachment to my own master. But through the years, I have come to realize what a tremendous privilege God granted me in bringing this great saint to my door. And I am grateful to him, and my love for him is so great that I can't even begin to tell you. Anyway, I entitled this article, God Comes to Visit. And when the third and final installment came out, everybody wanted to know where was the rest of it. And I told them that was all there was. There wasn't any more. Because you can only tell the facts as they were. After 10 years, God has once more directed my footsteps to his abode of bliss. That is the meaning of the word Anandasram, which is the name which Papa gave his husband. As I sit here, bathed in the peace and joy of this holy atmosphere, and surrounded by those who give the most perfect love and service I have seen expressed anywhere, my mind wanders back over the years in review of the tremendous drama which was unfolded on the stage of my life since first I met Swami Ramdas, our beloved Papa. What a saint he was and still is, because the divine which dwells within every man never dies. Particularly is this true of one such as Papa. His universal spirit still reaches out to the farthest corners of the earth to touch the hearts of men and entice them with his song of peace and joy and bliss to seek the Lord. It was in September of 1954 that I first heard of Papa. Reverend Bob Raymer of St. Paul, Minnesota, wrote and told me that a Swami friend of his was coming to America and would visit him and then fly to Seattle, Washington, which was my home. He asked if I would make it a point to see him and extend him any courtesy possible. I answered immediately, telling him that my husband and I would be most happy to have him as our guest. However, I received a reply stating that there were too many in the Swami's party for us to accommodate. Later, after Papa had arrived and we came to know how many were in the party, we knew we could have managed easily, but by then they were already established in spacious quarters in the Hotel Edmund Meany, located in the University District where we lived. We have many times since thought with regret of the great privilege it would have been to have had all of them in our home and the wonderful time in God we could have had together, but there can be no doubt that the Master Architect of the Universe had already done his own plan. Papa was expected in October. I received a call from Mrs. Max Groker, one of Papa's devotees, who had charge of the arrangements for him in Seattle, telling me when he was expected and asking if I would arrange for him to speak to the spiritual group which my husband and I headed there. I, of course, readily agreed and set about sending notices to the devotees. The day dawned when Papa was to arrive. Mrs. Groker telephoned and asked if I would go to the hotel and welcome him. I agreed. I donned the sari-like white robe, which I wore when giving lectures, stopped at a florist shop and bought a dozen beautiful long-stem roses to present to him, and walked over to the hotel. As I stepped into the elevator to ascend to the floor where Papa was staying, I was filled with mixed emotions. Anticipation at the prospect of meeting him, and hope that I was not being disloyal to my own guru in so doing. I had been a disciple of the great master, Paramahansa Yogananda, for 29 years, and my love and devotion for God and him was so great that even the thought of meeting another master seemed somewhat sacrilegious. Let me hasten to add that this was not fostered as a result of anything my guru had said, but stemmed from my own feeling. During his lifetime, he entered Mahasamadhi on March 7, 1952. He taught all who followed him, and taught us well, that God was equally present everywhere, in every church, in every temple, in every religion, in every man, regardless of race, color, or creed, and in every atom of space. He told us that we must always pay homage to him equally in every saint whom we were privileged to meet. However, to continue my story, as I left the elevator and walked down the hall to where Papa's suite of rooms was, was located, I saw two men standing outside his door. When I asked them if this was Swami Ram Dass' suite, they said that it was and that I should just go in. As I started through the door, I saw Papa. He was alone and standing back in the room but in front of the door. He took one look at me. His childlike face broke into a broad grin, and he started dancing as though he could not contain the joy of our meeting and must somehow express it. I didn't know what to think. I had never seen anyone behave in such a manner, but then I had never met anyone like Papa before. It was the strangest thing that had ever happened to me. I introduced myself and presented him with the roses. He greeted me sweetly and then promptly threw the roses on the table beside him without any comment. This, too, seemed strange to me because my own guru had always been very careful to acknowledge any gift that was given to him. It wasn't until 3 years later when I visited Anandasram that I understood the reason for Papa's behavior. He was garlanded from morning until night with beautiful flowers made by the loving hands of his many devotees who wished to express their love for him. Had he not immediately taken one off to make room for another, he would have fallen with the weight of a mountain of flowers. He also told me once that sometimes the flowers housed ants, and if he didn't take the garlands off quickly, they were apt to crawl all over him and bite him. He didn't blame them for wanting to savor the sweet nectar of God which permeated every part of his being. He invited me to be seated, and we sat and talked for a while, exchanging our views on God and his truth. I then asked if we might meditate together, not realizing that for one who had already attained, there was no need to meditate. He and his father were already one. However, he said sweetly, "Yes, let us meditate." So I sat at his feet and immediately felt myself lifted up into the presence of God. What peace, what joy, what bliss I experienced. He said afterwards that I had left body consciousness. I do not know. It was an indescribable experience. Little did I dream then that my meeting with him was to change the whole course of my life in order that I might fulfill my destiny. The momentous occasion of my first meeting with Papa ended with my offer to be of any service to him that I could. I also extended him an invitation to speak to our group the next evening, which he very graciously accepted. He arrived at our home promptly, accompanied by the other members of his party, Mother Krishnabai, Swami Satchidananda, Rani Lalita Devi, and Sagarlal Gupta, none of whom had been present when I met him the previous day. As I opened the door, he stood there, his face aglow, beaming like a little child who had come to attend a birthday party. My heart was filled with divine love for him as I introduced him to the devotees who had been eagerly anticipating his coming. I told them it was a rare privilege to meet someone who was completely God-realized, because few there are indeed who have the courage, the determination, the love, and devotion necessary to offer themselves and all that they have in complete surrender at the lotus feet of the Lord, that he may be revealed to them in all of his wonder and glory. Papa smiled sweetly and asked what we would like to have him discuss. I told him we were eager to hear anything of his own choosing. So knowing the depth of my love for my own guru, he spoke to us as follows on the greatness of saints. Beloved friends, you all know what it is to be in touch with a spiritual master. Many of you must have met such a master, basked in the sunshine of his grace, received his influence, and got your heart illumined with the light and presence of God. It is not only the inner longing for the supreme beloved of your heart that you should have, but also the contact of a God-realized soul, spiritually illumined and spiritually perfected. It is said by a great saint of India that the contact of saints is the most essential thing for one who is longing for God. In fact, God leads such a struggling soul to a saint, because direct contact with the universal spirit is not possible. You cannot have a relationship with God as you can with the personification of his spirit. Such a personification is the spiritual master. Saints are the very embodiments or expressions of God. If you believe in them and look upon them as such, you can derive from their contact unlimited strength for your spiritual advancement. The mind is a very difficult thing to control. Although you keenly wish that the mind should always contemplate on God and think of him constantly, it does not do so. You then require the help of a saint. This invaluable help, a saint alone can give you. If you look upon him as your sole spiritual guide, his light and grace will fall on you, and your heart will be free from all impurities. It is said that a saint makes you like himself. Saints are often compared to the philosopher's stone, which, by its mere contact, turns any base metal into gold. But a saint is superior, for by his contact, he makes you like himself. He fills you with divine radiance and joy. He awakens you to the awareness of the spirit within you, and your mind thereafter will always be in divine peace. All your desires of the senses will leave you completely, and you are filled with childlike innocence, purity, and love. You become the veritable expression of the divine. This is the goal to which the spiritual master's guidance leads you. Ramdas can tell you from his own experience that he has become what he is by the blessing and grace of saints. Had saints not come to his help, he would have been still striving and searching to find God. But since saints' grace came to him, his doubts ceased, and he began to feel the presence of God within. God took him to himself, absorbing him into his transcendent, all-pervading, and eternal being. We must keep the doors of our heart open to receive the influence when we approach saints. Then alone we can receive abundantly from them. Very few know the greatness of saints and spiritual masters. Even when they come to us and teach us and give us the benefit of their company, we do not understand them. This is true everywhere, not merely in the Western countries, but also in the Eastern countries. Very few understand saints or take advantage of their help and grace. Their hearts are always flowing out with love, compassion, and mercy towards those who come to them and those who are open to receive the grace are saved. It is said that saints transmit their powers in three ways, by thought, sight, and touch. If a saint thinks of a person, even though he is far away, that person is illumined. If he looks at a person, his entire being is shaken to its very foundation. A new consciousness dawns on him, and he finds himself a different person from that moment. If the saint touches a person, he feels a tremendous change taking place in him. In that thought, look as well as touch, there is so much love and compassion for the uplift, advancement, and illumination of the aspirant. The mind that seeks peace gets it in the presence of a saint by his grace. It is a peace that passeth all understanding. Man thinks that by his effort he will be able to attain God. This is entirely foolish. When we have struggled long, we come to know that we cannot realize him by our effort. Then, in all humility, we surrender to the Master, and his grace flows into us. A humble heart alone can receive grace, not a proud one. Meekness is a necessary condition. Thus the spiritual master brings about the inner awakening of the aspirant who goes to him seeking peace, freedom, and joy. Based on this inner awakening of the divine, true love dawns in his heart. Then he will love all beings and creatures because he sees God everywhere. The whole world now stands transformed at the very image of his beloved. He sees and loves his beloved in everybody. All this happens through the grace of the master. Anybody, whether good or bad, who comes to him can get his grace. He is like a lamp that gives light to anybody who is near it. The lamp does not make any distinction as to whether those who go near it are good or bad. It gives light to everyone equally. So does the spiritual master. That is why it is said the master has equal vision. When people of different temperaments and nature approach him, all of them are blessed with his light and grace. If the master discriminates between the good and the bad, where is the hope then for the fallen soul? The purpose for which the spiritual master comes to the world is to save the fallen, to raise those who are living in a lower level, miserable and unhappy. The touch of a saint gives them a new birth, a new consciousness dawns on them. They feel happy, courageous, and strong because they feel the presence of the master with them. The spiritual master never dies. He is not an ordinary person who dies and disappears from our life. When you once depend upon him, he is always there at your back to help you and guide you. If he takes you up once, you can always depend upon him, for you are always under his shelter. He will not leave you until he raises you to his status completely. As soon as Ramdas met a saint, he felt that very moment the master took his seat in his heart. His little self disappeared completely, as he was possessed by the master. He was free from temptations as his mind was made pure and desireless. By the master's grace, he could see the beloved on the face of everybody. He was feeling every moment the presence of the divine. When Papa had finished his speech, I asked if he would touch the heads of everyone there and transmit his grace to them in that way. He said, yes, Ramdas has committed himself. Hearing Papa agreed, Rani Lalita Devi was first in line and almost ran from the back of the room to receive his blessing. Papa laughed and joked with her about it as he blessed her. Someone in the party said later that it was very unusual for Papa to give individual blessings to everyone in a group. No doubt she wanted to be sure she availed herself of the privilege. I was the last one in line, and as I knelt before him, I said to him, Papa, please ask the Divine Mother to manifest within me fully, that I may be filled with the light and the bliss of her presence. He looked at me, smiled, placed both of his hands on top of my head, and said, "Yes, it shall be so." Realizing the tremendous power of God in him, one can only imagine how I felt in receiving such a benediction. When I arose, Papa said to me, referring to the devotee's presence, "You have here all of your fragrant flowers together. Are you all happy now? You must, of course, feel happy." With my heart overflowing with gratitude, I replied, "When God himself has come to us, why should we not feel happy?" Papa smiled a heavenly smile and said, "God has come to visit God." Hearing these words, the whole world seemed to stand still because they were a fulfillment of God's promise given to me several months before when I had offered myself to him in full surrender. The gracious Lord had lifted me into the state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi where, fully conscious, I lived in two worlds for 8 days, moving in this state with very little sleep and almost no food. He revealed to me such wondrous things that the memory of them is forever engraved upon my soul. Then he spoke these unforgettable words, "I shall meet you face to face, that our joy may be full." How could I doubt the reality of the vision? He had indeed come in Papa's form, and my joy knew no bounds. As I stood before Papa, the bliss which permeated his whole being engulfed me like a flood. It was as though I was lifted up into the arms of God, and I felt like a little child. With tears flowing from my eyes, I asked, "Will you be my Papa too?" He smiled his ever-blissful smile and answered, "Yes, he is Papa to all. All are his children." The next few days after Papa's visit to our home were thrilling indeed. We were privileged to attend 3 of the meetings which he held, 2 at the Chapel of the Church of the People and 1 at the University Unitarian Church. In all of his discourses, he stressed universal love and service. He put forth a sublime vision of a world wherein all people loved one another, lived in perfect harmony, and made a veritable heaven of this earth. He had the certain knowledge not only that it could be done, but that it would come to pass. He said that this faith was grounded on the truth that the world is controlled by God, who is so good and merciful that he will bring about this most desirable consummation. What a messenger of God Papa was! How universal in his every approach to life. Those who were good and those who were evil, friends and enemies, the rich and the poor, the great and the humble, were treated all alike. To him all were the forms of his infinite beloved. He poured forth the love of God from his being in such great measure that all who came before him finally melted and became helpless in that love. This is the true measure of a God-realized soul. No one can claim to be spiritual and have hate and animosity in his heart for any human being. Papa's greatness lay in his simplicity, his sweetness, and his childlike qualities. For him there was no pomp nor ceremony, no worship of gods nor statues, no adherence to ritual nor form. He believed only in the one Father God. Name, fame, and fortune meant nothing to him, because to him only the name of his beloved Ram was sweet. It was his glory alone which was to be spread throughout the earth, and he considered himself to be the wealthiest of men because he forever enjoyed the bliss of God's presence and had won the eternal goal of the Spirit. The only decoration he wore was the great light which shone in his face. He dressed in a simple white shirt and dhoti and took the name Ramdas. He was indeed the humble servant of Ram. As I write these things from my heart, I am moved to tears because his beloved form is no longer with us. But I have a certain knowledge that his blissful spirit hovers above the earth like a shining star in the heavens, lighting the way to paradise for men everywhere. The day for Papa's departure arrived too soon. He had asked if we were coming to the airport to see all of them off, and I said, "Yes, of course, Papa. I don't want to miss a minute with you." My husband had to work, so my son-in-law, Ron Smith, drove with me to the airport. Mr. Sagarlal Gupta rode with us, and we carried as much of the baggage as possible in our car, Papa and the rest of his party accompanying Mr. Groger in his car. When we went to the airport, somehow I found myself sitting alone with Papa on a bench. I shall always remember those moments. He sat there looking for all the world like a little child. I reached over and took hold of his hand and was thrilled when he made no move to take it away. He just beamed at me and started swinging one leg back and forth under the seat. A few years later, when I spent many months at the Anandashram, I often saw him swinging his leg back and forth in this manner or gleefully slapping his knees as his feet danced up and down when either he or someone else had made a joke or said something which stirred his sense of humor. His joy was such that it was ready to bubble forth at a moment's notice. Although the visions previously mentioned had seemed like the veriest reality and some of them had already manifested in the outer sense, still I had had great difficulty in accepting the things which God had revealed to me about myself and my own destiny. I thought surely that I must be suffering from hallucination and my soul underwent great torture as a result. Suddenly I felt a compulsion to lay the whole matter before Papa that I might have the relief of knowing the truth, whatever it might be. When I described the vision to Papa and asked him to help me either accept or reject it, he turned and looked directly at me and said, "Little mother, every word that God told you was true." Then he said, "There are three ways in which visions may be verified as truth. First, that they are confirmed by a saint. Second, that they are verified in the scriptures. And third, that they actually manifest and become prophecy fulfilled." A voice was heard over the loudspeaker announcing that the plane was now ready for boarding. My son-in-law had been talking to Swami Satchitananda, whom he dearly loves, while Papa and I were together, and his face was filled with joy as he came to pay his respects to Papa and to say goodbye to him. As Papa gave us his final blessings, the bliss within him communicated itself to all of us, and we were as if intoxicated with the nectar of God's presence. He turned again and again to pronoun to us while walking the distance between the airport and the plane. As the door closed on his beloved form, we all stood there searching the windows with the hope that we would have one more glimpse of him. Suddenly we saw him silhouetted against one of the windows with his hands again raised in pronoun to us. As the plane flew into the heavens carrying its precious cargo, my soul soared on the wings of prayer to kneel before the Lord and give thanks for the great blessing he had bestowed upon us. An anticlimax, which was in itself a climax, cannot be left untold. Unwittingly, both Mr. Grover and Ron had parked their cars directly opposite one another in the parking lot, but back to back. We were all still filled with bliss and scarcely aware of anything or anyone around us. We had said goodbye to the Grovers, and each one of us had walked to our respective cars without noticing their close proximity. We all got in, and Mr. Grover and Ron started the car simultaneously, backed up, and locked their rear wheels together. There was no crash because both were going slowly, just a gentle interlocking of the wheels. They got out, looked at each other sheepishly, saw that there was no damage to either car, apologized to each other, and drove away. As we drove down the Pacific Highway, Ron kept running off the road. His mind was so concentrated on God and on Papa, and his being so filled with bliss that it seemed impossible for him to follow a straight line. As can be imagined, it was a rather dangerous situation in which to find oneself, but he was completely helpless in it. However, God never fails his devotees. All of a sudden, there was a loud honking of horns and the roar of many motors from behind. I looked around, and there were six motorcycle policemen all riding along behind us. They followed us all the way to the city. The Lord had provided us with an escort to see us safe. We were literally speechless. I want to say from the depths of my heart, Papa, Papa, how truly great is your power in God, and how all-encompassing your love and protection. So that was the end of it.
She went into the air.
I thought you might enjoy that. I have many things which... when we open up next year. Incidentally, we will only have one more Wednesday evening meeting and one more, or two more Sunday meetings. So we should all take advantage of the privilege of being together and worshiping God. You know, it is a tremendous thing to be in the presence of a saint. I have this great privilege not only of being with Ramdas, but first and foremost with my own guru. And the times that I spent sitting at his feet, the times that I spent in the little churches which he established, are completely and absolutely unforgettable. It was as though, as I said in this book, and as though, and as Ramdas also said, the time and space stood still, and there was nothing but God alone. When God lifts us up and we are filled with this feeling of bliss, of ecstasy, this bliss of His radiant presence, it is an experience which supersedes every experience that you can possibly imagine. It exceeds it. It is tremendous. It is beyond description because you're lifted into a world beyond duality. You have this tremendous feeling that far exceeds anything which you have ever experienced in feeling before. And you feel this bliss, this light of His presence so greatly that you are lost indeed to the world. Many's the time I have sat at the feet of my Master. When I say many's the time, I only saw Him 12 times in my life. But those 12 times, sometimes it was every day for a couple of weeks. I'm just speaking of it in spaces of time. And the truth that he taught me, and even when he sat in silence, this feeling of oneness with God was so great that I knew that God sat before me in human form. There was one great thing that both of these great masters taught, and that was balance. Balance in every facet of life and of living. This is one thing that many people fail to recognize or fail to follow. They are lopsided. Either they are still too much on the material path, and when they come in contact with the saint, they cannot fully orient themselves and adjust to the new spiritual life, and they will come to church occasionally, maybe once a week, maybe once a month. But anyway, they're not quite ready. The seeds are planted, but the soil is not yet fertile. And there are others who are just drowned in spirituality to the point where they forget the world. Now, this, of course, is a wonderful, desirable state from the standpoint of spiritual realization and worship. But we must remember that on the way we have to go in balance. In order to attain the supreme state without any injury to ourselves, in the easiest manner possible, to get the greatest benefits, we must be completely balanced physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Each one of these things are part of God's life. We must realize that this whole universe and everyone and everything in it, every experience, every individual, is living God's life. Because where is he not? You can say, I have the only truth, but you would not be speaking the truth, because the truth is everywhere equally present, because God is that truth, and he himself created this universe that came from his great one loving being. He maintains it. He sustains it. He again disintegrates the outer portion of it and makes new forms constantly. But that one infinite spirit is always there. It keeps this world moving, and it keeps everything in balance. Man alone seems to be out of balance, and it is because of this tremendous ego sense which he has, which he cannot get rid of. He must lift himself out of the mire of this human consciousness. He must be able to lift himself up in balance, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, so that this great light, which is his own soul, may be revealed to him. He feels always that he must go seeking, searching outside of himself. And God and his kingdom, we are told by every great scripture of the world, is to be found only within. The amazing thing is, as you start to study the various scriptures of the world, you find that they do not disagree with one another. That each one of them, in their own words, in their own language, in describing the various things that happen within each man, use the terminology which is commonly known to their people. Their names, their cities, their rivers, their tribes, all of this pertains to what goes on in the human body and its development. It's a tremendously awakening and enlightening moment when you realize suddenly that the things that you've been taught in the orthodox sense weren't really true at all, except from an historical viewpoint, because everything which happens within then vibrates outward and becomes history. But in such a different way than what we thought. Such a different way. And you realize that you are the whole world, that this universe, which is within yourself, is an exact replica of that which is outside of yourself. And that you have but to explore the inner cavern of your heart, the mountain of your consciousness, and to be put in touch with everything all over the universe, no matter where it is. We spend too little time thinking about God. We spend too much time catering to our desires. If we were to spend the time that we spend feeling sorry for ourselves, crying out over the various things that make us unhappy,
in meditation of God, in love for God, in service to God, we would find that we had opened up a world that was beautiful beyond belief. You know, so many times we think of what other people say and do to us. And many times we harbor these thoughts, some of which are certainly not very good, in our consciousness for years and years and years. And they cause us nothing but trouble. And yet it is we ourselves who are to blame for this. No one else. No one punishes us. No one forces us to keep those thoughts in our minds. We do not stop to wonder what might have been the life of the individual who made that comment, who did that action as regards us when we were little or as we were growing up or even today. We many times take things to ourselves and we are insulted or we feel neglected when the person that we blame this sort of thing on has not one thought that coincides with such a thing in their consciousness. They are deeply engrossed in their own problems, their own lives, the things with which they are busy at the moment. And some of them are so miserable in their own misery that they're not even conscious of the fact sometimes that you're standing there. And yet because they haven't treated us the way that we think we should be treated, we take exception to it. And we build it into a mountain. And that mountain grows and grows and grows inside of us. And it fills our consciousness with darkness. Our whole being becomes all shut up. We stand in the shadow of our own light. And we should not do this. In order to live a balanced life, you should keep your consciousness fully upon God. You must love Him. You must worship Him. You must adore Him. You must serve Him in every way that you can. But this doesn't mean that you cannot enjoy the material things which He has given us. He has given us so much in every way. And we must make all of the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual work together in harmony if we are to attain our great goal, which is the realization of God within us. And He is our very self. There is so much emphasis being put today on power, the ability to attain things on the outside by practicing certain methods of consciously working at this. And this should not be. The concentration, no matter what we do, should be upon God alone. Because when you come to that final moment of the realization of your oneness with Him, then all the worlds open to shed forth their light, their radiance, their glory, their power, their supply, and to make your life a thing of such radiant beauty that you wonder how you could ever have walked in darkness for so long. Seek ye first God and His kingdom, said the Christ. And this is stated in one way or another in every single great scripture of the world. Seek ye first God and His kingdom. Stop feeling sorry for yourselves and count your blessings. Did you ever stop at the end of the day and look at the things which had happened, both good and bad, and to think how perfectly God had taken care of each and every single thing, each and every event? And He did it all without your specific help. Now, you may have thought you were doing it, but what could you have done without the intelligence, without the reason, without the judgment, without the power, without the energy which He so constantly supplies? Just think of this body and what a tremendous work, what a miracle it is, this temple not made by hands. How every moment your blood is flowing, your food is digesting, the waste material from your system is being eliminated. You are taking oxygen into your lungs. The thoughts are pouring into you. You have the vitality, the energy to do all of the things which you claim personally that you do. And yet when you stop to look at it, it is God. It is His hand behind all of these things which makes it possible for this world, this whole world, to be as it is. And for us, His creation, to live in it, His creatures. It gives one to think, really. We must keep our emotions in balance. In the Christian scriptures, it speaks of the man being the head of the woman. And of course, this fills the average man with a great deal of ego, because he thinks he is the Lord and he is ahead of woman. But that isn't exactly what it means, because in the beginning, you see, God made them equal. It says there, male and female made he them. Now, certainly I'm not a feminist. I'm all woman, but I'm not a feminist. And I have the male and the female balanced within myself totally and completely, which has to be in every single one, because each one has this positive and negative force within themselves, the male and the female. But in either one or the other, it is unbalanced. And this is why the man and the woman are brought together, that they might give each other the balance that is necessary in order to attain this final realization. Now, I operate from the feminine instinct constantly. But when it makes this statement that the man always has dominion over the woman, it speaks of the man as reason, as logic, as judgment, having control over feeling, emotion. In other words, you must not let your feelings, your emotions run away with you, because if you do, you're in trouble. And again, on the other hand, if you have too much reason, if you have too much logic, if you are too sterile in that way, you're dry, you're sterile, and you're lopsided. And sometimes you're over-emotional. So the trick is to bring these two parts together in balance, and having them balanced within you equally, then you can go all the way over the top of duality into the conscious knowledge of your oneness with God. But you must practice this balance. You must find a time for rest. You must find a time for play. You must find a time for study. You must find a time for work. But in all of these things, you can be meditating upon God. You can make your whole life a meditation, because you're doing everything for Him. At the same time, you know that you of yourself are nothing, and it is He alone that is doing everything through you. This ego is really something to cope with, because it is constantly telling itself what it is, where it is, what it can do, what it can't do, all of the rest of it. And the truth is that in effect it does nothing, but it doesn't realize it. All you have to do is to put your full consciousness upon God and to do these things that I've mentioned in balance. You must meditate. You must work. You must play. And you must be grateful. You must become a part of life. So many people, when they go on the spiritual path, want to run away to the mountains, to caves, to a foreign land, because they think by running away they're going to find God there. God is to be found only within themselves. And wherever they go, they're going to have to deal with whatever is within themselves. They think if they run away from the world, that it's going to be easier for them. But they have the whole world inside of themselves, and that's where the trouble lies, no place else. And the man or the woman, the soul, who can stand in the midst of all of life, regardless how difficult it is, how great the trials, how great the tribulations, and rise above this, gird himself or herself for battle, and rise above all of these things and make his life count and reach his God realization, that one can never be tempted again. Whatever he does then is above the law and for the good of the ones who come before him, not for his own benefit. But there's much misunderstanding about God realization. You ask yourself, who is God? What is God? What happens when you get God realization? What happens when you go into samadhi? When you go into samadhi, you lose consciousness of the body. Pardon me. You lose all body consciousness in the first stage, and this is called Satipatthi Samadhi. You are in a trance-like state. And many times, as your consciousness leaves the body, you can see you are in your astral body, and you can look down and see your physical body lying there. And it is, your astral body is held to it by a cord. And you go into a new world. It is this astral world. But this astral world is merely an electrical reflection of this world in which we live. There are many people who contemplate taking their own lives because they think by so doing they will escape from the misery, the troubles they have in this world. and they don't realize that they're going to be projected into a world that is exactly like this, except that it is in light form. Excuse me, just a moment. I have a cough drop here. I'm having trouble with my throat again. It seems to be the pattern these days. But then, when it is God's time and you have been there for long enough, you have viewed this new world, you come back into body consciousness. You are brought back. Never let yourself be taken. As you go into deep meditation, if you feel that you are being taken from your body, drawn from your body, resist it. Only go when you are filled with the love of God, when you feel that all of the conditions around your body are right for the purpose, when your love, your longing for Him is so great that you cannot wait to be lifted up into His arms. Then go, and He will always hold you there and protect you, and He will put you back when it is time. You go through many, many deep experiences. So then comes the second state of samadhi, which is called nirvikalpa samadhi. You must go through this first state, because as you go into this state, you attain the highest bliss that is possible for you in the human state. But it is a false ecstasy. It is a fool's gold, so to speak. You might have many visions, many of them psychic, many of them clairvoyant, occult, whatever. But go through those things. Don't get so entranced with these visions, with the various lights that come, that you forget your original goal, which is to seek your oneness with God. And as you work through this state, part of the time you will be in a trance-like state, and part of the time you will be able to function, still in a state of bliss, but fully conscious. And gradually, as you keep working with this, you will be able to feel this blissful condition while you are fully conscious and working in the world. Now, the supreme state of samadhi is called sahaja. And that is when the soul has made the final effort, has gone every bit of the last mile, has released the consciousness from the three bodily jars, the physical, the light or the astral body, and the idea or the causal body, has come face to face with this great light. No man has seen God at any time. Man in his human consciousness cannot see God. But man, as he lifts his consciousness up to the divine, then comes face to face with the reality, which is himself, his very self. As I've said many times before, that which you are seeking is not stranger. It is not to be found outside of yourself. But it is your real self. You give up this little self, which gives you nothing but worry, but trouble, which keeps you steeped in all of the things of the senses, and you realize the truth of your own being, and you realize what you have been missing, that everything you need in the way of thought, of power, of consciousness, of supply, of beauty, of wonder, of love, of fulfillment in every way, is then open to you, because you have obeyed the injunction of the Christ and sought first the kingdom of heaven, found God within yourself, and then as a result of that, all of your doors and your windows are open, and God pours His infinite blessings upon you. It is a tremendous experience, and running away isn't going to buy you anything, because what you are running away from is the fear that you have of your own ability to succeed. Now, if you try to do it all by yourself, you're going to have a tough time. But if you will give yourself to God in full surrender, surrendering everything which you call your own to Him, every bit of your will to His will, then in truth, He will lift you up and He will put you through whatever experiences are necessary in order that you may attain this final goal. Many times I come before you, as I've told you before, and as you have many times seen. And the body is weak. It is working out things for others. And many times it is very difficult to sit before you or stand before you and speak. And yet the power of God takes hold of whatever I call myself and lifts me up. And I've become conscious only of Him. A couple of weeks ago, you saw this happen. And it was beyond anything that I could have said to prove the truth that I gave you. Because I lost total consciousness of self. Now I'm coughing again tonight. It brings me down when I do this. And yet I am filled with the bliss of His presence, the power of His presence. I wish that every one of you could sit here in this body and know what it means to turn yourself over to Him totally and completely and be the witness of what He says, thinks, and does through this form. I wish you really could. I wish you could see how no matter how much He gives me to do on the outside, that somehow He gives me the strength to get through each day. And when I think I can't go another step or say another word to help another seeking soul, that somebody else comes and I say, well, Father, this is Your will. You have come in this form. So, if it be Your will, then You must also give me the strength to have this power flow through me. And You must help Your child who has come to listen to You, who dwells in this barn. And He lifts me up, and He makes me forget that I am tired. I am able to go without food, without drink, for hours upon hours. And I again am lifted up into the mountain of my own being, and I forget time and space. And I listen, and I watch, and I observe at the things that come forth. And I listen to what comes from whoever sits in front of me. And I know that He is there. And it's the most beautiful, the most wonderful experience in the world. There are so many who reject the idea of taking on responsibility. They don't want the responsibility for work. They just want to do as little as possible, the least amount of work, you know, with as little effort as possible, and for the greatest amount of pay. But don't you realize that we have a tremendous debt personally, each and every one of us, to give our utmost to God in every facet of our existence because of all that He has given us? And where would we be insofar as our supply is concerned in whatever field we stop to think about? In the field of science, of music, of art, of literature, you name it, whatever. If some great soul hadn't had the courage to work a little bit overtime and expand his consciousness and be given new ideas to help mankind. And we have the privilege of studying and of observing what someone else has done. When Papa said to read about the lives of saints, he told something that could be done that was absolutely marvelous. Because we can look at the lives of these great ones who have gone before us. We have seen in some cases the tremendous suffering which has come to them as a result of their seeking and their searching for this pearl of great price. And we have seen them exalted at moments. We have seen them torn with doubts. But we have seen them pick themselves up and keep on going, some of them with bleeding feet, and Ramdas was one of them. His feet were so bad at times from wandering the face of India that they were just bleeding. They were cut wide open. And people would take him in and would bathe and bandage his feet for him and give him all love and all kindness. And everyone who did a service for him was his beloved Ram. What a fascinating autobiography he wrote, In Quest of God and in the Vision of God. Because no matter what happened to him, it was his blessed Lord that gave him the experience. And he laughed with joy. And he thanked him for every adversity. Because it was those adversities alone which gave him the power of overcoming. And he saw God's hand working not against him, but for him. Trying to broaden his consciousness. To teach him through pain and through suffering. Because this must come as a part of the path. Because this human in us must go. It must die. Or it must be transformed in order that we get this great boon, this great pearl of the pearl of great price. I was reading something the other day where it said that crucifixion didn't mean death at all. It was merely a crossing, from one part of life to another, from the human to the divine. And I like that. I like that idea very much. It was a painful crossing, no doubt. And death of the ego came as a result. And a death-like state of the body with a mask of death over the face for a long time. And an unsureness of exactly what had happened when you were in this state, because you were neither what you were nor what you hoped to become. You were sort of in limbo in between. And yet God, through His infinite goodness, was giving you this experience, giving it so you would know the truth of your own being, so that you would find that indeed He was always there with His hand stretched out to lead you out of the darkness into the light of His everlasting presence. And no matter what price we have to pay, if we come out of paying that price with the full glory, the full experience of the realization of our oneness with God, is it not worth any price that we have to pay? What cowards we are sometimes, how we shrink, how we try to protect our little egos, how sorry we feel for ourselves with the least adversity which comes to us, when we should be down on our knees thanking God for His great blessings. My life has not been an easy one. From the moment I was born, it's been one long war, one long challenge, one long lifting myself up by myself, by my bootstraps. With God's help, I have come to this point. But it was because I had a strong will, and I used that will to always get a little bit further ahead. I was never content unless I was reaching out for the top, whether it be the top position, the top anything. I had to make it. And they say that experience is the great teacher. And so it is. But we must not waste our time in bad experiences. We must not lay bad foundations. We must change. This change that must take place within ourselves must come about. We must replace bad habits with good ones. We must replace bad thoughts with good thoughts, bad deeds with good deeds. And we must be ever willing and ready to serve and to give of ourselves and everything we have in order that His name, His fame, His glory may be spread across the earth. Because as Papa said there, this world is God's world. And God is good. He's wonderful. He's beautiful. He's all-powerful. And it is His purpose to see that this world gets back into shape and becomes the thing of glory that it was when it went out from Himself. Enough to stay as man himself, through the misuse of his own free will, has made it today. This will come, and it will be a glorious existence. It will be a glorious existence where man can communicate by mental telepathy. He will not even have to speak if he doesn't wish to. He will be able to read one another's thoughts. He will find a whole fountainhead of power within himself. And he will use that power for the benefit of all mankind. We have such untapped resources, not only in the outer sense, but mostly stemming from the inner sense, because everything that is within us is outside. But as each one lifts himself up and becomes perfect in God, he becomes a light, a radiant center, a magnet to draw all men to himself. And he spreads that light all over the earth. And it is said that when one finally reaches this supreme attainment, that there is a spiritual ambience forms around such a one, a spiritual, electrical, intelligent field that extends to the farthest corner of the earth, so that anyone who calls upon God in that form, with total faith, with total knowledge, that their prayers will be answered, will get it. The trouble is that we are beggars. We beg God for things. We never demand. We're afraid. We're really afraid to ask God, for fear it isn't His will. And yet, as He told me once, my will was His will. So whatever I choose to will, whatever I choose to make of my life, I can bring into manifestation by the very power of the desire, the very, very power of the knowledge, not the wish, not the hope, not these Casper Milk Toast things, but the specific, definite knowledge that that power, all of it, is within this form, and that whatever I will to happen or to bring into manifestation in my life, I can do. But I must make very sure that I have harmed no man, that I have not disobeyed the laws of God. I must make very sure of that. What tremendous powerhouses we are. And what do we do with it? We waste the electricity. And we pay a very high price for the electricity that we burn hour after hour and day after day and week after week and month after month and year after year. And we get nothing out of it because we have not conserved that power within ourselves. We have not given our all to God in order that we might give or receive His all, which He is constantly and continuously, everlastingly waiting to give us. God never punishes us. We punish ourselves because we refuse to come out of the doldrums. We refuse to come out of the state of lethargy, of grief, of self-pity. We waste precious days and hours and months and years in this self-pity when we could be using this to have a glorious existence on this earth and to do our part to lift the consciousness in the hearts of men everywhere. Why do we not wake up? Why do we always put God last when He is the very foundation, the very life within us? And without Him, we could do absolutely nothing. Do you not realize that it says in the Scriptures, and in every Scripture it says the same thing, that to God nothing, nothing, no thing is impossible? People who have had their spinal cord severed, who have been taken to shrines, all crippled and diseased, have had miracles happen, have gotten up and walked away from these things. I've had miracles happen in my own life and in my own body that I never thought could happen. It was through the grace of God. Now, many times I've gone to doctors, I've had surgery, but that also was the hand of God and for His own plan and His own purpose. So whatever He wants for me, whatever His will is for me, this is my will to do, with no exception whatsoever. I will listen to no one but Him. I will listen to Him through someone if He tells me that what they say is the truth. But in no way will I let anyone impose their human will on me if I do not feel that it is God's will for me. I would rather die first. I would rather die first. So this life can be lived gloriously, wonderfully, bountifully, with all power, with all jurisdiction over everything, if we would only make the effort to put Him first, to forget ourselves. This is the most tremendous thing, this forgetfulness of the little self. If you keep your mind on God every moment of the day, in complete love, worship, devotion, loyalty, and service, you don't have time to think of your little self. You're so busy serving God, thinking about Him, loving Him, that you are lifted up into a new world and you have forgotten all about yourself. Give a day's work for a day's pay and then work a little overtime for God. You will find that it will pay dividends such as you never dreamed of. Be willing to serve Him as you, all of you, do and have done so beautifully in this group. I am so proud of the effort that each and every one of you have made, of the great love you have shown. But you know, it has paid wonderful dividends. Every now and then it's a blessing that I leave, because then you get together and you get to know each other. And especially in this thing which we have been going through with Beth and Steve, the different ones that have served together have become acquainted with God in one another. And it's been a tremendous experience, any way you want to look at it. Very difficult for Beth and Steve, but still, with what they will eventually come out of one day, I'm sure that they will be very, very grateful and count their blessings. Certainly I count my blessings for every adversity that God has ever given me. I realize now that no matter what has happened in my life, how difficult it was, how bad it was, how good it was, how anything it was, that I am using that this moment in my work for Him. That everything I ever went through was necessary because it's given me understanding. It's given me love. It's given me sympathy. It's given me compassion. It's given me balance. My life has been such that I've had to operate both as a man and as a woman in the business world and as a head of a household at times. and to take on this responsibility. At the time, it wasn't easy. And I, like everybody else, felt a little sorry for myself, maybe like a martyr. But nevertheless, out of all of it came this balance and the knowledge of everything almost that anyone could bring to me, so that I understand. Many say, well, you don't understand what I'm talking about. How can you? You haven't experienced it. How do you know? There's very little that I haven't experienced, I can assure you. And yet I say that with tongue in cheek, because every time I think that everything has been brought before me and that I've experienced most of life, God pulls a new one out of the hat. And I think, well, He's infinite, He's eternal, and so where is the end of it, you know? But at least I can relate. I'm very different than, well, I guess I'm different than most anyone you can imagine as a guru. And it's because I have this balance that this difference is, because I address it many ways depending on what function I'm having to attend or what God directs me to do. I move among you as one of you. Still, I am your spiritual teacher. I don't set myself up in any way, because I'm the humblest of the humble, I can assure you. And when anybody says anything to me in the way of a compliment, immediately it is given to God. It is not kept for myself. Many have said, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other thing, and I feel my spiritual pulse, and it feels exactly the same as it did before. So I just go about my Father's business and forget about it. But I am so grateful for every experience which has come to me, because I understand, and it is understanding and this sympathy and this compassion and this love that you are able to give them, those who come before you, that touches their hearts. It makes you a part of their life. I care very personally, very specifically, very individually, very definitely about every single person that God has sent to me. I care what happens to you. I try to serve you in every way. And I worry about all of you sometimes, like a mother worries about her own children that she has born in her womb. And I have cried over you. But yet, I am impersonal in God. And when it comes to the point where the love of the crucible is necessary, I do not hesitate to use this type of love, this type of discipline, even though it means that there is a possibility that I will lose the devotee. Because it is their test. And I must do as God directs them me to do about them if I am to help them in the highest way possible. And what is it that is offended? What is it that is hurt? Except this little ego, which is so vast, so big. It thinks anyway. And it has to be gotten rid of. It has to be gotten rid of. And you hang on to it with everything you have sometimes. And so I have to blast it. And I don't like this. I hate it when I have to do that. It just tears me all up inside. Master used to be the same way. He used to say, it just killed him when he had to reprimand somebody, and I'm that way. I would much rather take you to God in love. But what am I going to do when I plead, when I teach, when I beg, when I do all these things, and still you are so stubborn and you fight so hard sometimes to hang on to the things that you have to get rid of? I'm not trying to set myself up as a Simon Legree. I'm just merely trying to do for you what you asked me to do, to take you to the realization of your oneness with God. And I'm giving you everything I have and asking nothing in return. I don't charge a penny for it. Whatever you want to give me, God directs you. I don't charge anything. And I don't do it for the money, I can assure you. I do it because of my love for Him, my great desire to serve Him, and to serve Him in you. And so I try and try and try with everything I have. I'm not doing it for me, I'm doing it for you. It isn't that I need fame or glory or a large following, because whatever He wants me to have, He will send to me, and He always has. I never advertise, I never go out after a soul. Every one of you are here because somebody else brought you or told you. Every single one that I have all over the world, it's the same thing. Somebody brought them. And who was that somebody? It was God. He brought them. And so they stay as long as He wants them to stay. If they choose to go away, they go away. And so they gain something, perhaps, hopefully. And so also did I, because He came in that form. And I too learned the lesson. What not to do or what to do. Because each one of us can learn from everyone who crosses our path. We never get so great that we can't learn from somebody else. He who would be greatest among you, let that one be the servant of all. So all I ask is obedience, not to exercise my human ego, not to lord it over you, but so that you might have the privilege of learning how to obey God in this form, so that when that final moment comes, when you must give up everything that you call your own, yourself, principally, all your near ones, your dear ones, your possessions, everything must be thrown into the ocean. Now, this is quite a moment of decision. But if you only realize that it isn't that you have to give up these things actually, although sometimes it happens, but rarely, it is that you have to give up your attachment to them and their possession over you or of you. That's all. Your possessiveness of them. You can have anything if you're not attached to it nor possessed by it. No matter what I have in this world, if God wants it today, He may take it. I mean this because I know that I am my Father's child, and that whatever I need will be given to me in accordance with His will and for my highest good. So it makes no difference if He wants me to live in a little shack or under a tree or in a palace. And I've done all of these things, and I didn't feel any different in one than in the other. But always I was striving to create beauty, to create goodness, to create a better world, no matter where I was. Every place I've ever lived in, I've tried to make it more beautiful when I left than when I came. And if we would all do this, what a wonderful place this world would be to live in. I do not say this to extol my own virtue. I say this because this is the way He has made me, and because I think He is so beautiful that I think that every effort that I make must be one of beauty for Him, to create beauty so that anyone who comes around me may see Him there, may feel this wonderful peace. They see the radiance, the glory of His presence. It is so wonderful that we have this room to come to. It's such an intimate room. And Bonnie gives of herself and everything she has with all of her heart. Her love for God and for all of us is so wonderful, so beautiful. And that love permeates every moment that we're in this place. And all of us meditating together with the consciousness fully upon God changes the whole atmosphere. And you can't help but absorb that and take some of it with you. But you know, if you will only make the effort, you can make every moment of your day this way. Wherever you are, wherever God has placed you, you can do your part to make that place in the world a better place in which to live. You can be an inspiration to those who will come after you, and to those who watch you from the sidelines. And you will show them what it means to use everything of God that you have, and what can be done to create this peace, this wonder, this beauty, and the realization of that infinite presence within themselves. Because that glory will show on your face. It will show on your skin. It will show in every action, every word, every thought that comes from you. And they will gather around you like flies. And you will change not only your life, but you will change the lives of everyone who comes before you. What greater thing can there be in life than that you serve God in this manner? And in serving Him, you serve yourself. Because you and your Father are one. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of Thy glorious presence.
Of Thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Open my eyes that I may see thy face.
Open my eyes that I may see thy face.
Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere.
Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere.
Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love.
Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love.
O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
May thy love shine forever.
May thy love shine forever.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts.
May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts.
And bring them to thee.
And bring them to thee.